We have some joint conference committee reports, and I would ask Senator Coe, are you ready in regard to House message number 242 having to do with Senate File 57?
Oh, what have I got back?
Okay, I'd ask that be read in at this time.
Joint Conference Committee number 1 report, Senate File 57, Education Accountability. Reference House Message number 242.
Hey, Mr. President,
I'm sorry.
I would move...
Signing for the... Well, the Senate, Senators Cole, Jennings, and Rothfuss signing for the House, Teeters, Harshman, Stubson.
Now we're ready for you, Senator Coe.
Yeah, Mr. President, I would move message number 242, Joint Conference Committee Report on Senate File 57, Education Accountability. Your committee sort of had an alley fight with these guys for a while. Started yesterday afternoon, and we finally finished them off this morning. With that, I would refer to Senator Rothfuss for an explanation of the Joint Conference Committee Report.
Go ahead, Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President and body, we had 5 issues that we came down to disagreeing on. I'm going to go over what those issues are, and then we'll run through the amendments. The 5 issues that we did not have concurrence on when we went into committee were the concept of whether we should be doing MAP testing in grades K through 2. The Senate's position was to do MAP testing in those years. The House position was to not do MAP testing in any of those 3 years. And you may recall MAP testing is the benchmark adaptive assessment that is a quick 45-minute test that measures growth during the school year. You can do it up to 3 times a school year typically. The Senate's position was to do 3 times per year throughout those grades and throughout 8th grade as well, so K through 8, whereas the House position was to do that 2 times per year. What we settled on was a compromise for MAP testing. We ended up doing it so that they would be tested in 2nd grade 2 times. They'd also be tested in 3rd through 8th 2 times, so we're going 2 times per year. And then 1 time in 1st grade was kind of the middle ground compromise that we found. Another area where we did not concur when we went into the committee was with regard to 12th grade ACT testing. The Senate's position going into conference was that if the individuals were college ready after their 11th grade ACT test, they would take the Compass test. If they were not college ready, they would take the ACT test again. The House softened that position to the point where if it was college ready, testing would be completely optional. We felt that that wouldn't give us sufficient data to measure growth and achievement and college readiness for all of the students in the state of Wyoming after the 12th grade level. So what we did at that was compromise on a test called the Compass, which once again is a short benchmark adaptive test. We use it for placement primarily, so most of the students that are going to the University of Wyoming are already going to take the Compass anyway in the fall. We're having all students take it basically in the spring towards the end of their senior year so that we can get some data at the end of the senior year for all students. Again, it's a quick test, relatively straightforward. So from a time standpoint, it is a reduction in time, and we called that a compromise and proceeded on that. One other area where there was no disagreement, the 4th area was the concept of whether there would be waivers for the 16-to-1 student-to-teacher ratio that we established for K through 3 during the last session. Now, we have a program in place where you can apply for a waiver under current statute after Senate file, well, it was the recalibration bill last year that put that into place. But that was not considered enough. The House wanted a situation where if you exceeded or met expectations for your school under the accountability model, you would be granted an automatic waiver that you wouldn't have to apply for. We were not satisfied with that. What we ended up compromising on for that was that you would have an automatic waiver if you exceeded expectations. That would not be the case for meeting expectations. And we added a reporting requirement such that we would get an explanation of where the district was making exceptions, what those ratios would be, and perhaps a little more information there. So basically we met them halfway and asked for a reporting requirement. And the final point of difference that we wanted to meet with them on was the concept of ninth grade credit as being an indicator for college readiness. Now, there's a lot of data that indicates this was the House position. We didn't have that in the Senate file that was going over. The House amended to add ninth grade credit as a college indicator, a college readiness indicator. And what that means, and there's good data that supports it, is after your ninth grade year, the number of credits you've earned towards high school after that year are a very strong indicator of whether you'll be college ready at the end of high school. There's a good, strong correlation there. Now, the reason we resisted that is because the Senate side felt that it could be very easily gamed. If we make it an indicator that a school is judged on, in other words, you're doing well if you have good ninth grade credit earning, and you're doing poorly as a school if you don't have good ninth grade credit earning for your students, then the natural outcome of that is going to be grade inflation, so that you will just naturally give better grades, and more of your students, whether they earned it or not, will receive credit for the courses they take. That was our concern. Regrettably, as the overall balanced compromise, we ended up having to relent on that one. So the ninth grade credit will be reported as a benchmark for college readiness by the schools. We weren't happy with that outcome, but we felt that in the overall compromise, that was something we had to give up to make sure that we were getting some of the other areas that we were looking for. In the end, we had compromise on three of them. We actually ended up with a House position on two of them, which we felt like we were getting rolled, but they left unhappy. So from that standpoint, I guess we'll have to be satisfied with the outcome. Running very quickly through the amendments on the Joint Conference Committee report, on page 1, the first portion, pages 2 and 3, is just a discussion correcting for how to handle IEPs with testing. The bottom half of page 1 is amending the grade 12 ACT, as I discussed. Moving on to page 2, the top half, or the top quarter, is also changing the ACT. And then we have some substantial language change, but it's basically just trying to create better language for compliance with federal disabilities and the No Child Left Behind Act for providing provisions with regard to special education. You can see in the middle of the page, on page 9 after line 23, is this readiness related to the ninth grade credit accumulation. There's a little bit of language we just agreed with that there was a nice amendment by the House at the bottom of page 2, lines 14 on page 20, and then page 22, line 2, which is just adding some additional language for longitudinal data collection based on some discussion we'd had earlier in the interim. Page 3, the top on referring to pages 22, deals with that change in the MAP administration so that it's in grades 1 through 8. Again, once in grade 1, twice in grades 2 through 8. Conforming language in the middle of the page. More MAP discussion at the bottom of page 3. On page 4 in the large paragraph, that's where we're looking at the 16-to-1 waiver change such that schools that are exceeding expectations will be granted an immediate waiver. Cleanup language on the bottom. And then the bottom of page 4 and going on to page 5 is another substantial amendment, which is a change to the language where we're discussing the writing component of the assessment. And it basically says it's kind of vague as far as what we're looking for in writing, but it says more specifically the writing and language assessment shall require objective measurement of written responses to informational and literary texts and shall include writing tasks of varying length. We asked for more detail on what that meant. They didn't really have any more detail, but we weren't offended by the language, so we went ahead and accepted the House on that position as well. The rest of the language there is conforming. And with that, Mr. President, I'm very hopeful that the body will concur on this, and I'd ask you all to vote aye.
Any discussion? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to know, as it left, we were told that we had less testing than we did last year. I just want to make sure as we went through all of this, we can go back home and tell our teachers in our classroom that you're actually going to do less testing this year than you did the previous year.
Mr. President, there is less testing even now than there was when it left the Senate, and that Senate position was less in terms of hours than it was last year. So we've continued to scale down the hours throughout this entire process. Sometimes we've been presented with numbers that are a little bit misleading as far as an increase in testing. That's counting the number of tests that come into this system rather than the number of hours. So we'll try and put together an analysis, and we've talked about that as a committee, because I believe that is something that everyone is going to be hearing a little bit about, and there'll be some further questions. So now that we have that ironed out, Mr. President, we can put something together that helps you to answer your constituent questions.
Senator Beacom. Thank you, Senator Office.
Thank you, Mr. President. And reporting, how much more reporting are we going to be looking at if this becomes law relative to where we were in terms of the number of reports that they may have to prepare?
Are there other questions or discussion from these two gentlemen before they can get up at one time and dispense with most of it? Any questions of the committee? Further questions of the committee? Senator Jennings, are you going to rise to the answer or to the question? Let's wait and get the rest of the questions, then we'll rise to the answer. Go ahead, Senator Landon.
Thank you. Mr. President, just a little more discussion on the COMPASS exam, that 12th grade level. Up in our district at home, as you mentioned, Senator, we use that COMPASS as a snapshot for placement into post-secondary education classes. I'm just wondering, I guess I don't know enough about that test to have a good feeling as to whether or not that's going to give us progress. I kind of liked where we stood before here in the Senate, which was, if those students aren't ready, we're going to ask them to take that ACT again, and that way we get a good measure on that 12th grade year.
Other questions of the committee? Senator Schiffer, go ahead.
There's a question on the ninth grade attainment benchmark or standard. Will that impact particularly the very, very small schools of the state that use a rollover scheduling? In other words, certain courses are offered every other year just because they don't have teachers to teach it, so they'll pick it up the following year, particularly in that ninth grade. Oftentimes the ninth grader delays taking a course because it won't be offered his ninth grade year, but when she enters 10th grade, that's when they pick it up and they flip-flop back and forth. Will that have any impact, particularly for those very, very small schools?
Are there other questions of the committee members? If not, I'm going to start. Senator Coe, you can rise to some of those if you like. We can go to other members if you so choose. Go ahead, Senator Coe.
Mr. President, just on the COMPASS, I believe, and someone correct me if I'm wrong, this, of course, was a compromise on our part in 12th grade. I believe in post-secondary that you take that as a freshman anyway. I believe I'm right in that. I can't tell you much more about it than that. This ninth grade concept was, pretty new to us, to be honest with you. I don't think we really got a total explanation of that in the conference committee. I'm not quite sure how it's going to work, but I will say one thing. Remember that everything we're doing here is a work in progress. And we'll start working again in the spring, and we'll be able to accumulate more input and be able to make decisions as to how all this works. And this process is going to be ongoing for a couple of years. And I'll tell you, if it's not working well, we'll come back in January and hopefully try to fix it and make it better. That's my answer to that.
Other members of the committee. Go ahead, Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll try to address the senator from Johnson County on the small schools. I think that when we're doing tests every year, I don't know that it's going to make as much difference as the subject, but as the growth. So if they're rolling, it's available this year, but then they catch it next year, it's going to be from this last test to this test and the amount of knowledge and growth that they've had. So it's not something that we really talked about or really went into depth on, but I don't think it's really going to make that much difference because it's just what they have at this test point and what they have at this test point. I think the senator from Fremont County asked if there was going to be more reporting. There's some reports in here, but I think that's going to be in the work in progress because right now we're kind of setting up the guidelines. And then in this next year, we will go more into exactly what we're going to do and what we expect out of it. So I believe that question would be better answered when we're back in front of the body again. And as far as the compass, in 12th grade, we wanted a data point. As they go out, we wanted that data point to be able to say, as they came through, here's that snapshot there. Now, if they take the ACT in 11th grade and they think they need a better score as they go out in 12th grade, they can still take that again. But this compass, and it was a compromise on our part, is purely just that snapshot as they leave 12th grade and headed for college or whether they're headed for the workforce, so that we know that from 1st grade to 12th grade, here's our snapshots and here's how we'll be able to compile our data. And that's what we're looking on the accountability, is the data points on how the kids progress, more than what exactly are they going to use that. Even though they can use it, that's really not our point.
Senator Rossless, would you want to make some final comments on behalf of the committee or anyone else from the committee? I think we got most of the questions. Go ahead and cap this thing off. We'll take a vote.
First of all, addressing the reporting concept, this is something that we've been discussing, is trying to decrease the reporting load. I don't think we substantially increased the reporting requirement, but there are some additional reporting concepts in there. The reality is we over-report, we have redundant reports, we abuse the administrators and the superintendents, I think, right now, because we haven't done a good job of consolidating that information into one place. So I think one of the things that we do have to address during the interim and as we move forward is a better reporting system so that the administrators can spend more time in the classroom instead of just filling out report after report. So that's something I think we're sensitive to, but we don't have a solution for yet. Regarding Compass and the ACT for the Good Senator from Natrona County, it is certainly not as good as doing the ACT test again. Again, it was a compromise to make sure it got out. They didn't want anything. We wanted something that we had uniform across the board so we could have a good data set we could work with. So it's not a perfect solution, but we're satisfied that it's better than nothing, and we do have a data point there. Theoretically, there's a correlation between the Compass performance and the ACT performance. It's not a perfect correlation, but it's better than nothing. So that's where we went, Mr. President. And finally, with regard to the ninth grade credit accumulation for the senator from Johnson County, my understanding of what the House wants is they want a credit count, not necessarily what course is being taken, but how many credits did you achieve in ninth grade by the end of ninth grade. So with regard to the flip-flopping of what courses are being taught, I don't think that should play a role in the outcome of how the data is provided, based on my understanding of what the House's position and desire was, Mr. President. Thank you.
Thank you. Ready for the question? The motion is that Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee number 1, referencing Senate File 57. You've been asked to vote aye, and the Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
No.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Anderson?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 27 ayes, 3 noes.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee number 1. In reference to Senate File 57. We have one more conference committee report, but I'm going to inject another thing here. We've had some really patient guests over here, so we're going to go to that, and then we'll come back to the conference committee. But members of the body, since 1994, a scholarship has been presented to a legislative intern. So for the past 18 years, 22 exceptional students from the University of Wyoming, Laramie County Community College, Western Wyoming Community College, and Eastern Wyoming Community College have benefited from over $6,100 in memorial contributions. The funds are currently administered by the University of Wyoming's Partnership for Civic Education at the American Heritage Center. The Wyoming legislature sponsors the internship program, which allows students enrolled at an institution of higher education to obtain credit, along with a unique insight into the legislative institution and its vital responsibility in creating public policy. Conversely, the legislators benefit by having someone who can help them in the areas of constituent mail, bill tracking, or summaries, drafting talking points, writing news releases, or newsletters and similar services. During each legislative session, a deserving student is awarded a scholarship. A recipient has been selected to receive the scholarship for the 61st budget session. During our joining our scholarship recipients is Mrs. Lavonda Copsa, who has served as the intern coordinator for the past 11 years. Before that, Lavonda worked for the Wyoming Legislature as House session staff. This year, the Legislative Selection Committee chose two outstanding students as recipients of the Wyoming Legislative Intern Scholarship. They are Elizabeth Kate Barlow, and Elizabeth, I think, is from Gillette, and Bill Warfel of Cheyenne. Kate is attending Sheridan College and will have an Associate's of Science degree by the spring of 2013. After graduation, she plans to work on her bachelor's degree in wildlife biology. Bill is attending Metro State College of Denver and will have a Bachelor of Arts degree in the spring of 2012. After graduation, he plans to work on a graduate degree in economics. Lavonda will give Kate and Bill their recognition at this time. And if you'd like, you can have a statement here, but we're glad to participate. Go ahead, if you'd like.
Supporting the intern program, you guys make it possible and make it worth our while coming down here and making it educational. Thank you.
This experience was phenomenal, and I appreciate all that contributed, and hopefully I'll be back later, next year, maybe. We'll see.
Well, thank you. We'd just like you to know that we're very glad to participate in this scholarship for the benefit of both Wyoming students and the legislature. And so before they leave, we'd like to have you read the letter on your desk with, about making any future contributions to the intern scholarship program. And thank you all very much. Senator Nicholas, are you ready in regard to message number 267?
Mr. President, I am.
We'll have that read in at this time.
Joint Conference Committee number 1 report, Senate File 59, Public Employee Retirement Plans Benefit Increases. Reference House message number 267. Signing for the House, Representative Pedersen, Harshman, and Petroff. Signing for the Senate, Senators Nicholas, Martin, and Meyer.
Go ahead, Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move Conference Committee report for Senate File 59, Public Employee Retirement Plans Benefit Increases. Folks, we talked about this just recently. The issue here is on the retirement plans. How do we look forward and address the issues of cost of living increases? You recall that we said, look, you got to have about 120% buffer in order to make sure that you're planning these accounts in a manner in which there will be adequate buffer for market adjustments for the equity proportion of their portfolio. The House came back with 105%, and the issue was, are we going to compromise on some arbitrary number rather than establish a number that would in itself create problems because it was inadequate. Remember, that plan was at 114% just a few years back, and it's eroded down from the 114%. So when the House came back to say 105% is all you need to buffer against, that's a problematic number. So what we did is did a new approach saying, first of all, the first two paragraphs you see on the first page, those are two paragraphs in the findings portion of the bill. And we simply point out, and that is historical accurate, and that is we talk about the legislative intent, It's the intent of the legislature that all public employee retirement plans be managed to maintain an actuary-funded ratio of not less than 100%, and that the retirement board determine from time to time an appropriate level of funding sufficient to withstand market fluctuations without experiencing reductions below the desired 100%. So we're saying, look, if you don't want to tie to a number, fair enough, but you have to make a determination of what that appropriate buffering is. And then we further say that it's our intent that COLAs and multipliers be allowed only in the event that the actuary funded level will remain above the 100% plus the additional percentage the retirement board determines is reasonably necessary to withstand market fluctuations. Now, the statute below is the one that was added by the House. We adopted that concept and said, in accordance with those findings, all plans shall be managed to maintain their actuarially funded ratio above 100% throughout the life of the plan. The actuarially funded ratio recommended by the board shall provide for an appropriate margin above this to allow for the market fluctuations. So what this does in part is get away from this notion that, hey, our plan at 80% is okay. It's not okay at 80. It's 100% plus a margin. And then above that, we can begin to see whether the plan itself can pay for the cost of COLAs. No. And that directing the board, retirement board, what they could not do, we sort of changed that around by saying, look, no benefit changes, including cost of living and multipliers, shall be recommended until the system's actuaries provide an opinion that the funded ratio of the plan will remain above the funding level that we just set out prior. And then we say the analysis upon which the proposed benefit change shall include a decision matrix, and there's already A through D or F in the statute, and we added another paragraph, the appropriate level of actuarial funding ratio above 100%, so that's the market protection. So we're saying, look, this is our objective, this is what you need to do, and it's our expectation that you'll take, there has to be an opinion with respect to the cost of the benefit throughout the life of the plan. The last item is for Fireman's A. It is exempted because Fireman's A is the account you're called. That's a closed plan, and that's the closed plan that's depleting. They do have COLAs, and it's unclear what the ultimately, I mean, whether it's properly funded. They argue that it is. The actuaries argue they're not, but that since the plan is closed, eventually when the lights turn off, that's the money's either there or not. But we have exempt Fireman's A, the closed plan.
Discussion, Senator, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Question, Mr. President, and that is, I'm assuming that nothing that we're doing here erodes the situation in which any COLA, whenever, if it is even advised by the actuaries, must come through the legislature.
Are there other questions here before? Go ahead, Senator Perkins.
Just a question, Mr. President. Looking at this and. It's a little bit different approach for the management, and I guess one of the things I have is we talk about that. When you look, for example, on the first page there, it's intended in the legislature that all public employee retirement plans be managed to maintain an actuarial funded ratio of not less than 100%. And the additional language about looking for, you know, being careful of market appropriations or fluctuations. I guess, with respect to that, Mr. President, my question is there anything in there that can be construed that they would have to be required to come back and reduce benefits so that they stay maintained at managed at that 100% level?
Other questions, other discussion before Chairman of the Committee reports? Go ahead, Senator Nicholas, go ahead.
Mr. President, with respect to the two questions, first of all, the requirement that the legislature set the COLA remains in the bill, and so the issue is the outline of when the board is. I mean, we're not telling the board you can or can't do things, but what we do say is if you're going to come to us, the COLAs have to meet these requirements. With respect to whether that'll be reductions in benefits, if the plan's not getting to where we need to go, That gets to be a more complicated issue, and that is to what extent under a defined contribution plans, when your PIP, your contributions are met, are you entitled to them? I mean, this is a defined contribution plan, and for those people that have actually, it's a defined benefit plan, thank you. Because it's defined benefit for those people that went through the course of their life, their expectation is during their whatever benefit was defined during their working career, that's what they'll receive. We actually talked with my colleague about the idea of, well, you grant a COLA and you don't hit these marks, can you take it back? That's a complicated issue, one which we couldn't deal with. It's an interim topic, but a more direct question is, at this point with these changes, are we marching back towards 100% funding? And the answer is yes. We've got a number of things getting us back there, Mr. President. One is we've eliminated the COLAs. Two is remember we sent the other bill that says for brand new employees, they're going to be paying the same rate, but their benefits will be based upon a lower multiplier, so they'll have lower rates. And they're, instead of being the high 3 years, it'll be the high five. And they're going to have to work longer, partly because, the next generation of workers are going to pay in part for the current benefits. But that is the nature of a defined benefit plan. And, you take all of it, and you take one, you take it all. But with all those changes, we are marching back towards the 100%. Right now, it's anybody's best guess. The actuaries say 30 or 40 years, depending, to get back to 100%, so long as their model works. There's criticism of the model as to the rate of return that they project in there. At the same time, a whopping two or three years of a whopping stock market changes it dramatically, too. But best guess is it'll be at least 10 years before we see the accounts approach this at least 100%.
Thank you. Are we ready for the question? Question being called. The motion is that the Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to Senate File 59. You've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk, call roll.
Barnard. Bebout. Burns. Case, Christensen, Coe, Cooper, Dockstader, Driscoll, Amrick, Esquibel, Geis, Hastert, Hicks, Hines, Jennings, Johnson, Landon, Martin, Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins, Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
no.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Hastert, aye to no. Closing. Vote closed. 27 ayes, 3 noes.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 and reference to Senate File 59. Jessica, we've kind of had you as a captive audience here. You've been very patient. Would you like to come up here for a minute? Jessica, you've been here with us for almost 2 weeks now, and you've been, a very good servant, and we're very appreciative of that. What I have here is a resolution to express our appreciation for the work that you've done for us, and we hope in doing so that you've learned lots and have things that you can take back and share with other students. We also hope that you'll take with you an appreciation of what democracy looks like. I think a certain appreciation of how hard sometimes you have to work in order to conduct that practice. But with that, again, I say this is just a recognition of your dedication, and we hope that that will serve you well in your future. I think if we have a minute, we would like to hear about some of your plans and your future aspirations. We know that you have proven yourself to be a very talented person. And so if you have a moment, we'd love to hear some of your goals and some of your aspirations, things that you plan to do. So the mic is yours.
Well, after I graduate, I plan on going to the College of William and Mary in Virginia and get a major in either photojournalism or natural resources. I guess it's kind of my life goal to work at a prestigious magazine like National Geographic, maybe, but I guess we'll see.
Well, I would think that that's a very distinct possibility, so stick to your goals and thank you so much for your service.
Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand at ease until sound of the gavel.
You've all heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. We are at ease until the sound of the gavel.
Oh, no. They've got a...
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, it's by way of edification of the body. We're waiting on five reports for the House to deal with and then back to us. We have two that we just did that's got to go over there. Then we have them signing of an enrolled acts. But while we're waiting, perhaps, Mr. Minority Floor Leader, we could do a few presentations and... so that when those are, we'll convene back in and then finish our work and wait for the governor.
Is that acceptable to you, Mr. Minority Leader? We'll take a little time here, and if we feel like we've got time for our presentations, our little ceremony, then we'll do it. If not, we can always do it after we. Yeah. No. Well, we'll just remain at ease and work it out as we go. Thank you.
Thank you.